Good morning. Good morning. I think we're ready to call the meeting to order. This is an open meeting of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board on March 29th, 2010. On behalf of the board, I'd like to welcome everyone who's joined us here today, both in person and those listening to the webcast of the meeting. Today, the board will consider a recommendation to propose a new auditing standard that would supersede the board's interim standard on communication with audit committees. The board will also consider related amendments to other board standards. Before we proceed with that agenda, I'll note for the record that all board members are present. As I noted, the first and only item on the agenda today is a staff recommendation with respect to an auditing standard on communications with audit committees. And to present the staff's recommendation, let me turn to the group in front of me, Chief Auditor Marty Bauman and colleagues. Marty.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. We're pleased this morning to recommend that the board propose a new auditing standard entitled Communications with Audit Committees. As Jennifer Rand and Barbara Vanis will discuss in a few minutes, the proposed standard we are recommending today will enhance the relevance and effectiveness of the communications between the auditor and the audit committee and will emphasize the importance of effective two-way communication between the auditor and the audit committee to better achieve the objectives of the audit. The proposed standard has been influenced by a number of factors and developments, including the increased use of risk-based audit methodologies and the importance of judgments and estimates in financial reporting. Additionally, the board's standing advisory group has discussed auditor communications with audit committees on several occasions, including most recently at the October 2009 SAG meeting. Standing advisory group members expressed support for proposing a new standard to enhance the auditor's communications with the audit committee, especially in the area of critical accounting estimates. Candid and comprehensive communications to and discussions with the audit committee by the auditor are a critical element of audit quality. Audit committees play a vital role in the oversight of the financial reporting process and need to understand from the auditor such things as the significant risks requiring special audit attention, the critical accounting estimates, including the significant assumptions used, and any bias by management in those estimates, the quality, clarity, and completeness of the company's financial statements and related disclosures, and other matters arising from the audit that are significant to the oversight of the financial reporting process, including when the auditor is aware of complaints or concerns raised regarding accounting or auditing matters. This proposed standard includes the requirement for these and many other important communications with the audit committee, thus improving audit quality and furthering investor protection. Before I turn the floor over to Jennifer, I'd like to thank her, Barbara Vanich, and Jessica Watts for their significant efforts on this proposed standard. I'd also like to recognize the many people outside of my department who have made substantial contributions to this project. First, I'd like to thank Bob Burns and Nina Mojiri-Azad from the Office of General Counsel for their thoughtful insights. Second, I greatly appreciate the contributions of our colleagues in the other divisions of the PCAOB for their comments. And finally, I'd like to thank the staff of the Securities and Exchange Commission who provided timely and helpful assistance and advice. I'll now turn the floor over to Jennifer Rand, Deputy Chief Auditor.
Thank you, Marty. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. As Marty mentioned, we are pleased to be here this morning to recommend that the board propose a new standard on communications with the audit committees. In developing the standards, our primary objectives were to accomplish two things. First, to enhance the relevance and effectiveness of the communications between the auditor and the audit committee. And second, to emphasize the importance of effective two-way communications between the auditor and the audit committee to better achieve the objectives of the audit. We believe the proposed standard accomplishes these goals. There were several matters that were considered in developing the proposed standard. I'd like to describe those matters, and then Barb will provide further details about the specific underlying requirements. First, in developing the standard, we evaluated all the auditor communication requirements with the audit committee and the board standards and rules. In doing so, we were mindful of the responsibility of many audit committees for the appointment and retention of the auditor. Accordingly, the proposed standard combines the requirements from two of the board's interim standards, AU Section 310, Appointment of the Independent Auditor, and AU Section 380, Communications with Audit Committees. The proposed standard is intended to set forth requirements regarding the auditor's overall communication responsibilities with the audit committee that are applicable to audits conducted in accordance with PCB standards and rules. The proposed standard also includes an appendix that identifies other standards and rules that require communication with the audit committee about specific matters. Second, the proposed standard includes the auditor's communication of the overview of the audit strategy, including a discussion of the auditor's and the audit committee's consideration of significant risks. In performing a risk-based audit, the auditor's assessment of significant risks is an important consideration regarding testing controls and substantive audit procedures. Communication of the significant risks identified by the auditor gives the audit committee an opportunity to understand the auditor's view of the most important risks and material misstatements, and to communicate its views relating to those risks based on its knowledge of the company. The auditor's understanding of the audit committee's view could assist in the development of the auditor's risk assessment and audit strategy, ultimately resulting in an improvement to audit quality. Next, many of the other communication requirements in the proposed standard relate to the auditor's observations from the audit. For instance, the proposed standard includes requirements regarding accounting policies, practices, and estimates, the auditor's evaluation of the quality of the company's financial reporting, going concern, corrected and uncorrected misstatements, difficulties encountered in performing the audit, among others. Another area of emphasis in the proposed standard includes focusing on two-way communication. Certain SAG members have emphasized that effective two-way communications between the auditor and the audit committee will benefit the audit process. There are several areas in the proposed standard where the auditor is required to make inquiries of the audit committee about matters that may be important to the financial reporting process. For instance, the audit committee may be aware of complaints or concerns raised regarding accounting or auditing matters. The proposed standard requires the auditor to inquire of such matters. The proposed standard also includes several communication requirements for the auditor to communicate with the audit committee, such as the auditor's observations arising from the audit, as well as if the auditor has become aware of complaints or concerns in performing audit procedures him or herself. Based on the evaluation of observations resulting from the auditor's overall interactions with the audit committee, the proposed standard includes a new requirement to evaluate whether the two-way communication between the audit and the audit committee has been adequate to support the objectives of the audit. If not, the proposed standard requires to evaluate the effect, if any, on the auditor's assessment of the risks and material misstatements and ability to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence. This requirement was included to emphasize that effective two-way communication is beneficial to achieving the objectives of the audit. The last area I'd like to highlight is the timing of communications. The proposed standard requires that communications be made in a timely manner. Further, that all communications required by the proposed standard should be made annually to the audit committee prior to the issuance of the auditor's report. Timely communications from the auditor provide the audit committee with the opportunity to make informed decisions and take actions which may affect the quality of both the audit and the financial statements. In summary, the proposed standard substantially includes the requirements from the board's interim audit standards, AU Section 310 and 380. However, the proposed standard adds new requirements that we believe provide information that is useful to the financial reporting process or will increase the effectiveness of auditor communications with the audit committee. I will now turn the floor over to Barb Banich, Associate Chief Auditor, who will discuss some of the new requirements in further detail. Barb?
Thank you, Jennifer, Mr. Chairman, and members of the board. As Jennifer mentioned, my remarks will briefly discuss some of the new requirements in the proposed standard in a little more detail. As the auditor's primary relationship in the auditor of an issuer is with the audit committee, the proposed standard requires the auditor establish an understanding of the terms of the audit with the audit committee rather than management. This understanding includes the objectives of the audit, the responsibilities of the auditor, and the responsibilities of management, and is documented in a written engagement letter which is provided to the audit committee. Appendix C of the standard describes the matters to be included in an engagement letter in more detail. The second area I would like to mention is the requirement for the auditor to communicate an overview of the audit strategy, including the initial significant risks identified. These communications should also include the auditor's planned use of specialists, internal audit, or in an audit of internal control, the use of other external parties. The auditor also communicates the roles, responsibilities, and locations of other firms participating in the audit, and when other firms are involved in the audit, how the auditor determined that he or she was the principal auditor. We believe these communications facilitate the audit committee's understanding of how the work of other parties may affect the audit, as well as the auditor's overview of risk. Additionally, the auditor communicates significant changes to the planned audit strategy and the initial significant risks identified. These changes may occur during the audit due to the results of audit procedures or in response to external factors such as changes in the economic environment. The next area I would like to discuss is communication requirements in the area of accounting policies, practices, and estimates. The proposed standard includes all of the accounting-related communication requirements of AU Section 380, which we believe are good requirements. Additionally, like AU Section 380, the proposed standard acknowledges that management may communicate certain matters relating to accounting and financial reporting. For certain communications, the proposed standard allows the auditor to determine if management's communications were adequate, and if so, does not require the auditor to repeat those communications. However, if the auditor determines that management did not adequately describe the matter, the auditor should communicate any omitted or inadequately described material to the audit committee. There are other communications relating to accounting policies, practices, and estimates that the standard requires only be made by the auditor. These include the communication of the auditor's evaluation of the quality and not just the acceptability of the company's significant accounting policies and practices, which include disclosures. The proposed standard includes communications similar to the SEC's existing requirements to communicate critical accounting policies and practices and alternative accounting treatments discussed with management. We believe including these requirements may help the auditor in making all required accounting-related communications. The proposed standard requires the auditor to inform the audit committee of consultations outside of the engagement team on significant accounting matters. These consultations could include discussions with the firm's national office or consultations with external parties when the firm does not have a national office. This information may benefit the financial reporting process by providing the audit committee with information about complex transactions that may pose higher risk or for which the accounting treatment may be controversial. We also added requirements in the area of critical accounting estimates. The proposed standard uses the SEC's definition of the term critical accounting estimates rather than particularly sensitive as used in AU 380. We believe that this may help the auditor determine which estimates should be communicated to the audit committee. New communication requirements relating to critical accounting estimates include a discussion of significant assumptions used, a discussion of any significant changes to assumptions or processes made during the year, including the reasons for the changes, and when critical accounting estimates involve a range of possible outcomes, how the recorded estimates relate to the range, and how various selections within the range would affect the financial statements. With respect to all accounting estimates, the proposed standard requires the auditor to inform the audit committee when the auditor has determined the potential management bias may exist. Another area which we thought was important and should be communicated to the audit committee relates to the auditor's evaluation of going concerns. What is communicated will depend upon the auditor's conclusion. If the auditor concludes that there could be substantial doubt, but the auditor's doubt is mitigated, the auditor communicates the conditions and events that, when considered in the aggregate, indicated that there could be substantial doubt about the company's ability to continue as a going concern, as well as the information that mitigated the auditor's doubt. If the auditor's doubt is not mitigated and the auditor concludes that there is substantial doubt about the company's ability to continue as a going concern, the proposed standard requires certain additional matters to be communicated, whether or not management's plans mitigate the auditor's substantial doubt. The proposed standard requires the auditor to communicate information related to both corrected and uncorrected misstatements. For uncorrected misstatements, the auditor provides the audit committee with the same schedule of uncorrected misstatements related to accounts and disclosures that was presented to management. We believe presenting a summary which shows only the net effect of misstatements may be misleading. Additionally, the auditor communicates the basis for determining that the uncorrected misstatements were immaterial, as well as the qualitative factors considered. Corrected misstatements that might not have been detected except through the auditing procedures performed should also be communicated to the audit committee. The proposed standard includes a new requirement for the auditor to communicate to the audit committee other matters arising from the audit that are significant to the oversight of the financial reporting process. An example of this would be when the auditor is aware of complaints or concerns raised regarding audit or accounting matters. This new requirement acknowledges that there are other matters that may be beneficial to the financial reporting process when communicated to the audit committee. The staff also considered the timing of communications to the audit committee. The proposed standard requires that communications be made timely and also that all communications be made annually prior to the issuance of the auditor's report. The proposed standard includes an appendix with definitions as well as an appendix which includes details of what should be included in an engagement letter. Included in the proposed amendments are several amendments to the communication requirements in the board's existing standards on interim financial information. The amendments include requiring the auditor to make any required communications prior to the company's filing of its interim financial statements with the SEC. The release includes two additional appendices, which include the amendments as well as a narrative comparison of the proposed standard to the comparable standards of the ASC and the IAASC. Lastly, the proposed standard still allows for both oral or written communications. However, in either case, it requires that the documentation include a description of the communications in enough detail to enable an experienced auditor having no previous connection with the engagement to understand what was communicated by the auditor to comply with the provisions of this standard. This should help those, such as the engagement quality reviewer, determine that appropriate matters were communicated to the audit committee. This concludes our remarks on the proposed auditing standards on communications with audit committees that we are recommending the board propose today. The release includes a number of questions for which we are seeking specific feedback. We would also encourage comments from interested parties on topics for which we have not posed specific questions. The staff recommends that the board issue the proposed auditing standard for public comment for a 60-day period ending May 27, 2010. Now we would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much for those presentations. Let me turn to the board and ask if there are any motions regarding this matter.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Yes, Mr. Harris.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board instruct the staff to release the proposed standard on communications with audit committees and propose related amendments to the board standards as recommended for public comment for a period of 60 days.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Okay, thank you. Let me begin with some comments of my own on this matter. A fundamental objective of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act is to strengthen the role of the audit committee by placing it squarely at the center of the relationship between a public company and its auditor. The provisions of the Act that deal with the committee's oversight of the audit are predicated on the idea that independent, informed, and proactive audit committees can and should be one of the keys to protecting the interests of public company investors. Putting the audit committee, rather than management, at the intersection between the company and the auditor enables the auditor and the audit committee to do their jobs more effectively. This objective can only be realized, however, if there's meaningful and robust dialogue between the auditor and the audit committee. Accordingly, the proposed standard the board is considering today would expand and clarify the rules of the road that govern auditor-audit committee communications. The new framework is intended to implement the Sarbanes-Oxley Act's objectives by enhancing and making more concrete the substance of these communications. Four examples of this stand out to me. First, the proposal addresses establishing an understanding between the auditor and the audit committee of the services to be performed. The changes in this regard would better align the board's standards with the requirements of the Act. Second, the auditor would be required to communicate with the audit committee regarding audit strategy and to discuss significant risks that the auditor identified during the planning and risk assessment phases of the audit work. The goal here is to make audit committee oversight more effective by arming the committee with upfront information regarding the auditor's views of the risks and how they will be addressed. Third, the proposal would clarify required communications regarding the auditor's perspective on the company's critical accounting policies and practices and its critical accounting estimates. These topics are particularly relevant in light of the additional attention that the economic crisis has brought to management's judgments and estimates, particularly those related to fair value. Fourth, the auditor would be required to provide insights and evaluation regarding the quality, clarity, and completeness of the company's financial statements, including related disclosures. These matters go to the heart of both the auditor's and the committee's responsibilities. The proposed standard also emphasizes that communication is a two-way street. Of course, the Act does not provide the board with any jurisdiction over audit committees. However, strengthening auditor-audit committee communications should benefit both parties. From the perspective of the auditor, the committee is likely to be aware of matters that may affect the audit, including complaints or concerns that have come to the audit committee's attention regarding accounting or internal control matters. More broadly, it makes sense for the auditor to evaluate whether the two-way communications between the committee and the auditor have been open and adequate to support the objectives of the audit. The auditor and the audit committee have a common interest in the reliability of the company's financial reporting, and the relationship between them should reflect that fact. If that's not the case, the auditor needs to think about whether the effectiveness of the audit process has been jeopardized. For these reasons, I support issuing the proposed standard for public comment. As more time passes since the crisis that led to the enactment of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, it's important that auditors and audit committees not lose their focus on the importance of candid and timely communication. While I certainly expect that we'll receive comments that will help us improve and strengthen the proposal, the standard the staff has drafted is a long step forward. Finally, I want to thank all of the staff members who contributed to moving this new standard to the stage at which we're ready for public exposure and comment. Chief Auditor Bauman, I think, has listed everyone that's involved. I'd like to just particularly acknowledge and emphasize the efforts of three Office of the Chief Auditor staff members, Jennifer Rand, Barbara Vanich, and Jessica Watts. Thanks for your hard work and commitment to this challenging and important project. Let me turn then to the other members of the board and ask if they have any comments or discussion they'd like to raise. Charlie.
Thank you, Dan. Well, I'd like to also start off by thanking the staff. A number of people helped with this proposal, but in particular, I'd like to recognize Barb Vanich, Jessica Watts, Bob Burns, and Needham Luxuria Todd for all their hard work. This is a challenging proposal. In directing the stock exchanges to adopt rules, making the audit committees directly responsible for the appointment, compensation, and oversight of the company's auditor, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act intended to free auditors from management and encourage them to be more diligent in protecting investors. This reform spurred a significant change in the relationship between auditors and companies. but based on our experience observing how auditors handle difficult audit issues, such as determining how to handle identified misstatements, I believe there's still room for improvement. If the audit committee isn't aware of areas where management may have an incentive or opportunity to pressure the auditor to go along with its desires, then it can't effectively intervene to support the auditor. The proposed standard takes on the challenging task of encouraging open, forthright, and robust discussion as a way to educate audit committees on such matters. I must admit some skepticism as to whether a new standard will prompt such robust discussion, though. To my mind, much of the room for improvement has more to do with culture than it does a weakness in the standard. Nevertheless, the proposed standard is a better articulation of the culture we'd like to see, so I support it. Again, I'd like to thank the staff for all the hard work, and I have no questions, so I look forward to the comments on the proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Niemeyer. Other comments? Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support this proposed auditing standard on communications with audit committees. It is well known that auditor independence is essential to the integrity of an audit of financial statements. As you, Mr. Chairman, and Charlie have mentioned, auditor independence was a core principle underlying the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002. In hearings leading up to the passage of the Act, witnesses suggested that when auditors view their main responsibility as serving the company's management rather than its full board of directors or its audit committee, the auditing process could be compromised. For this reason, the Act requires audit committees of listed companies to be directly responsible for the appointment, compensation, and oversight of the work of auditors, and requires auditors to report directly to the audit committee. It also requires audit committees to be independent. This audit committee and auditor reporting relationship with its independence from management is fundamental to the spirit of the Act. I believe that the proposal before us today furthers the Act's intentions by strengthening that relationship. The proposed standard supports the audit committee's role in managing the work of the auditors. It does this by clearly identifying the auditor's duties when communicating with the audit committee. In short, the proposed standard updates and enhances existing auditor communication requirements to ensure that the audit committee has access to the critical knowledge an auditor gains during the course of the audit. As such, I expect the audit committees and investors alike will welcome this proposed standard. As described in the proposed standard, in addition to updating the interim auditing standards to reflect the requirement that the auditor report directly to the audit committee, there are four overarching objectives contemplated with this proposal. These objectives, as you stated, Mr. Chairman, are one, establishing a mutual understanding of the terms of the audit engagement; two, providing the audit committee with an overview of the audit strategy and audit timing; three, providing timely observations arising during the audit about significant issues surrounding the financial reporting process; and four, assessing whether the two-way communications between the auditor and the audit committee have been adequate to support the objectives of the audit. Given auditor compliance with the requirements of this proposed standard, I believe that the audit committee's oversight of the auditor will be strengthened, and the type of independent discussion between the audit committee and the auditor that was envisioned by the Act will become more of a reality. While each of the requirements in the proposed standard is important, I want to emphasize a few key areas in the standard that address the third objective of providing timely observations to the audit committee about significant issues. The requirement to ensure that the audit committee is informed about critical accounting policies is not new. In fact, the Act requires auditors to report to the audit committee, quote, all critical accounting policies and practices to be used, close quote. Also not new is the requirement to inform the audit committee about the process used by management to develop critical accounting estimates, including how management subsequently monitors those estimates. The proposed standards add value to the existing standard by emphasizing the need to discuss the significant assumptions used in these estimates when there's a high degree of subjectivity. The auditor will also need to discuss material changes to these estimates made during the year and the range of possible outcomes. These requirements are designed to ensure that the audit committee is knowledgeable of critical financial reporting decisions made by management. This knowledge, I believe, is vital for an audit committee to effectively oversee the financial reporting and auditing process. In addition, specifically requiring the auditor to have a thorough discussion with the audit committee about the judgments made in developing these critical estimates prior to the issuance of the auditor's report, I believe, will serve investors well. This will also be a required discussion with the audit committee before the quarterly financial statements are filed. Again, I believe that audit committees, investors alike, will be very supportive of such a timeline for requiring these types of communications to take place. The proposed standard also requires the auditor to evaluate the communications made by management to the audit committee to determine whether the communication requirements of the standard have been met. If the auditor determines that management's communications are not adequate, then it is the auditor's responsibility to communicate any omitted issues to the audit committee. Standards issued by other standard-setting bodies do not require the auditor to make additional communications regarding specific accounting matters if management has not communicated them. Appendix 3 compares the requirements of the proposed standard to similar standards issued by the International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board and the Auditing Standards Board. I think it is important that every PCAOB proposed standard include such an analysis together with an explanation of why our standards are in the best interest of investors. As always, I am very interested in hearing from all interested parties, and particularly investors, during this 60-day comment period. And given the topic, I also want to especially encourage audit committee members to comment. In closing, I join you, Mr. Chairman, the other board members, in acknowledging the work done by Barbara Bannock, Jessica Watch, Jennifer Rand, under the supervision and direction of Marty Bauman, in developing this proposed standard on audit committee communications. I would also like to thank Bob Birds and Nina Majuri Azad from our general counsel's office for their work on this standard.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Other comments? If not, there's a lot here. Let me see if I can get you to give a little detail about some of the things that have been mentioned. We'll try to finish by lunchtime. First, there have been some references to the fact that there would be a new requirement for the auditor to communicate with the audit committee about the overall audit strategy and about the significant risks that the auditor has identified. I wonder if you could say a little bit more about how you think that's going to work in practice and exactly what should be communicated. And I guess I asked it in part thinking that perhaps there's some limits on what you'd want to have communicated in that regard. I mean, after all, at the end of the day, the audit committee is still part of the client, and I think there are limits to what an auditor would want to tell a client about how they plan to conduct the audit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I can answer your question, when communicating the overview of the audit strategy, we would expect the auditor to give information regarding the significant risks identified, the planned approach to those risks, as well as the potential effect on the financial statements. If I could give an example of what would be appropriate, for example, if the auditor believes that investments are overstated due to improper fair values, the risk to the financial statements would be that investments are overstated and perhaps other than temporary losses are understated. The auditor's approach to that risk might include matters such as obtaining independent pricing, testing management's process for controls over fair values, and the use of a specialist. Information that would be too much detail would be something to the effect of, our selection will include testing the fair values of the 50 largest positions held by the company. But the use of specialists as well as the role of others, we believe is appropriate.
This would be a new requirement. I mean, do you think there's communications along these lines today in practice?
It is our belief that some of these matters are being communicated currently.
Let me ask about something else. There is a requirement that the auditor inquire of the audit committee to whether it's aware of matters that might relate to the audit, including complaints or concerns raised regarding accounting or auditing matters. That would be in paragraph 8 of the proposal. I mean, a couple of things about how that would work in practice. First, I think there's a pretty much parallel requirement in the suite of risk assessment standards that we already have out for comment, I guess out for comment a second time. Is this a parallel to that, or would this go beyond it, or is this, or what's the connection between?
I would say that's a correct view, that this requirement complements the requirement in the proposed risk assessment standards. And it's also broader in that it would address any matters that the audit committee might be aware of that would relate to the audit.
Okay. In any event, this is basically an ask the audit committee, inquire of the audit committee requirement. There's another provision in the proposal, paragraph 22, for those following along. I guess the audience can't follow along at the moment, that says that the auditor should communicate to the audit committee matters arising in the audit that are significant, such as complaints or concerns raised regarding accounting or auditing matters. It's pretty much the same language, but this is the other side of the communication. I wonder if you could talk a little about how you see these two provisions fitting together, and I guess in particular what obligations the auditor has to ferret out things like complaints or concerns regarding financial reporting that the audit committee should perhaps be aware of.
Yes, certainly. The proposed standard does require that the auditor inquire of the audit committee of any matters it might be aware of related to the audit. That does not mean that the standard is not trying to seek to impose a requirement for the auditor to go out and look for those matters, just for the auditor to communicate those matters when, during the course of their audit procedures, matters would come to their attention. So, for example, if during the test of controls the auditor tests the process that management has in place for ethics violations to be communicated, or just the process for other matters to bubble up to the audit committee relating to concerns regarding financial reporting process, the auditor would then communicate those matters.
I think the provision that the auditor communicates complaints or concerns that the auditor becomes aware of through whatever process is a very important one. The auditor, because of the responsibility to sign the financial statements, may not be impartial in their decision regarding the assessment of those complaints or concerns. So I think the audit committee needs to hear about all of those complaints or concerns that they become aware of.
So to the extent that there are, I guess what you might call whistleblower complaints or allegations being received either by the auditor or the audit committee regarding financial reporting, both parties ought to be aware of those.
Both parties should be aware of those and be satisfied that they've been resolved satisfactorily.
Right. Asked about something else. There's a provision in the standard, to some extent paralleling existing requirements, that the auditor should communicate with the audit committee regarding significant accounting policies and practices. And then, of course, there's a separate requirement for discussion concerning critical accounting policies and practices. If you look back at the definitions, we do have a definition of critical accounting policies and practices in Appendix A. We don't have one of significant accounting policies and practices. What's the relationship between these two things, these two kinds of discussion?
We believe that the critical accounting policies are a subset of significant accounting policies. Significant accounting policies involve a much broader range of transactions that occur over time and aren't limited necessarily to ones that are inherently uncertain because of judgments or the complexity of applying them.
Is significant accounting policy or practice defined anywhere? Or that,
it's
you know,
not. It's not, and it would vary from company to company. But the significant accounting policies are the ones that issuers would typically include in their disclosures of the financial statements.
Okay. I think, Barb and Jennifer, I think you both referred to the fact that the required communications can be written or oral. And I mean, can certainly see the virtue of that. I mean, oral communication, a more formal opportunity to communicate, more of a back and forth. On the other hand, there's often less precision to oral communications, more arguments about what was actually said and perhaps not always a common understanding of what was said. What's the thinking that went into giving people, I guess, continuing to give people a choice between
oral and written communication.
That was an issue that we gave significant consideration to, whether everything should be required in writing or if we should permit flexibility for many of the requirements to be made orally. It was a matter that we specifically discussed with the Standing Advisory Group in October 2009. The feedback we received from that discussion was if all the communications were in writing, some of the SAG members were concerned that some of the discussions, the candidness, the frankness, the openness, which is what we want to have accomplished, might be chilled if everything was in writing, such that auditors may not include everything in writing and they communicate it orally. And so the Standing Advisory Group really encouraged us to permit flexibility with oral or written communications. The proposed standard provides that flexibility. However, we've included a documentation requirement such that if communications are made orally, then the documentation must enable an experienced auditor to understand the communications that the auditor had with the audit committee. So there must be something in the documentation so that it would be understood. There are a couple matters, however, that we do require to be in writing. One is the audit engagement letter. Another is the listing of uncorrected misstatements, which the auditor would provide to the audit committee.
You mentioned the risk of casting a chill if everything is required to be in writing. At the risk of really casting a chill, did you discuss this provision with our enforcement staff? I mean, obviously, it's much harder to enforce a requirement that's manifested in oral communication. And I think we do see not infrequently in our inspection reports examples of situations where these communications weren't made, or at least it's difficult to determine whether they were.
Right. We did have significant discussions with enforcement as well as inspections, and they believe that the communication or the documentation for, if it's an oral communication, that they it enables an experienced auditor to understand would be appropriate. So they are okay with permitting oral communication.
I think that's an important factor. I mean, there were already documentation requirements under AS3, I believe, but specifically requiring in this standard that if oral communications are made, that they have to be documented such that an experienced auditor can understand how the requirements of this standard are met is an important addition. I think also Barbara and Jennifer mentioned a lot of the important points, but sometimes timeliness can be really critical to the audit committee, and I think an oral communication may be needed at that in that juncture. So oral is permitted, but documentation is required.
Okay, let me turn to something else that I think is new in this proposal, and that is the requirement that the auditor evaluate the adequacy of the two-way communications with the audit committee. And I wonder if we talk a little about how you see that working in practice. I guess a couple things come to mind. I mean, there's an element here of evaluating the adequacy or how well the body that retains the auditor is doing its work and discharging its responsibilities, which I think can be kind of an uncomfortable aspect. This also has echoes of something that was relatively controversial in the internal control auditing area, that is the auditor evaluating the effectiveness of the audit committee as an element of ICRF.
The two-way communications we've included because it was an important issue that our standing advisory group has mentioned. And as we've described, the standard includes many communications from the auditor to the audit committee and also requires the auditor to seek information from the audit committee. So evaluating the adequacy of the auditor's communication, we don't see it as being significant additional cost. And in fact, we see the benefit to be high and the cost to be low. And we think it's just a natural evaluation of the communication process. For instance, if the auditor's communicating information to the audit committee or seeking to have a private meeting with the audit committee without management present, the auditor would evaluate how is the audit committee responding to what's being communicated to them. If the auditor's communicating issues of significant risk, is the audit committee aware of those matters? How are they responding to that, et cetera? So we don't see it as any significant additional cost. With respect to your question on ICFR, we view those two as complementary. NICFR, the auditors looking at the effectiveness of the audit committee in regards to internal control over financial reporting. So there's a specific obligation there, whereas this is the adequacy. It's overall, and we see that as complementary.
The way the requirement's phrased, it says at least at the beginning that the auditor should evaluate whether the two-way communications between the auditor and the audit committee have been adequate to support the objectives of the audit. And then there are some specifics listed. I suppose in practice the auditor isn't that likely to conclude that its communications weren't any good. What the risk or the possibility is that it'll conclude that the audit committee wasn't forthcoming with the auditor, or perhaps the auditor's identified some issues on its own that it felt the audit committee should have brought to its attention. What's the auditor supposed to do with that? How does that impact the audit?
The auditor has concerns about the adequacy of the communications, the audit committee's responsiveness to risks that the auditors identified, what they're doing about it. The auditor, it could increase the risk of material misstatement, perform additional audit procedures in response to any risks identified. We also see a situation where the auditor may see that the audit committee isn't as responsive or the adequacy hasn't been as good as they would have liked. However, the auditor may feel that based on the audit work performed, sufficient appropriate evidence has been obtained. So we see it depending, potentially having an effect on risk and potentially the effect on the audit procedures that were performed.
The auditor may have to consider communicating with the full board of directors if they feel that the two-way communications has not been appropriate and they've not been receiving appropriate response from the audit committee to matters raised. That's one of the things that the auditor might consider doing. There could be more dramatic actions, of course, if they feel that they can't get appropriate information if they inquire about it.
Okay, just a couple of other things. You mentioned, I believe it was you, Jennifer, that mentioned that the proposal would require that communications be timely. That's certainly fine, but then specifically that it be made annually prior to the issuance of the auditor's report. With filing deadlines getting shorter and shorter, and is this likely to end up being a roadblock to timely filing with the SEC?
We don't believe so. This requirement is the same as the existing requirement for the communications already required by the SEC. In addition, we believe that this already happens frequently in practice, as the audit committee don't want to find out subsequent to the issuance that there was a matter that really required their attention. And, it wouldn't be uncommon for people to have a teleconference shortly before issuance to convey any other matters.
I guess it kind of leads to another question that bothered me a little as we've gone through this process. In some ways, it seems to me this standard is designed for Fortune 500 companies. And how will it work? Or is it scalable? Is it workable for very small companies, employee benefit plans, publicly traded trusts? I mean, there's a very wide range of public companies out there, not all with the same kind of formal audit committee structure that large companies have.
We believe the requirements are scalable. So for example, in an employee benefit plan, it wouldn't be likely that you would use other auditors or that other firms would be involved, so that would be less required communication. We do pose a question in the release to ask people specifically if there are matters that we haven't considered in the process.
Yeah, well, I hope people will take that seriously. Again, I think it's hard for us to anticipate how really anything we issue may affect the whole range of public companies that are out there, and I think we're very dependent on getting that kind of information. Well, let me close with two questions that I'll combine into one. And I think Steve referred to the ISO, the International Auditing Standards, and the relationship between our standards and those. And of course, the Auditing Standards Board also has, I think, since we adopted the interim standard, they've adopted a new standard on communications with those charged with governance. I wonder if you can highlight how this proposal, if adopted, would make our standards similar to or different from the ISO's, kind of what the key points of similarity and differences would be, and the same with respect to the
AFC's standards?
I'd be happy to answer that one. There are several similarities. However, there are also differences between our proposed standard and the ICES and the standards of the AFC. With respect to similarities, one similarity involves the auditor's communication of the audit strategy and the timing of the audit. Both require a written engagement letter, so that's another similarity. The ICES include a requirement to assess the adequacy of the two-way communications between the auditor and the audit committee, which we have as well. And there's also, we've included a requirement regarding going concern, which the ICES have in their standard. So the auditor has doubts about the company's ability to continue as a going concern. The auditor has a requirement that the auditor communicate that, and we've included that in our proposed standard as well. With respect to differences, the ICES do not provide any communication responsibility for the auditor as it relates to management's communication of accounting policies and practices. As we've heard from our standing advisory group and our current standard provides, management often communicates on its own about accounting policies and practices to the audit committee. And so our standard acknowledges that that happens, however, indicates that if the auditor believes such communications were not adequate, or if it, there was anything significantly omitted, the auditor would communicate that. The ICES don't provide for that type of communication. Our standards are different also with respect to that we've looked to the SEC's definition of a critical accounting policies. The ICES do not have that direction. They're intended to be for applicability in all types of jurisdictions. So their requirement is not directed to the SEC's requirement, which ours has done. Also, we have a requirement for the auditor to communicate significant matters that the auditors had with management prior to the auditor's appointment or retention. The ICES do not include that. And finally, the ICES, as they acknowledge, they're written for applicability in all jurisdictions. So they have certain requirements that we didn't think was applicable for U.S. public company audits. One of them being, is the accounting framework appropriate? And for the auditor to assess whether the accounting framework is appropriate. And for U.S. public company audits, the SEC determines the appropriate accounting framework, whether it be U.S. GAAP or IFRS. So we did not include a similar provision in our standard. So those are the highlights regarding the ICES. The ASB, really the same, since the ASB is, their standard is very similar to the ICES.
Okay, thank you. That's everything I wanted to ask about. So unless there's any other discussion, I think we're ready to vote.
Well, I just had one follow-up. Yes, I think that was I think this is a significant improvement, and I think you answered the question, Dan's question, which is a partial answer to this one as well. But for those who have not gotten the background materials that we have comparing the standards, why would you say that this standard is in the best interest of investors? You've talked about the improvements, but if you could briefly summarize why you think it's in the best interest of investors vis-a-vis the other outstanding standards, what would your answer be?
I think we already had a pretty good standard. AU 380 Communications with Audit Committee was a good standard. But we've taken a real hard look at that and looked at ways in which we could make those communications more effective, including more effective two-way communications. We've added a number of additional requirements around the critical accounting estimates that we think, especially around those significant assumptions where those estimates can be provide a greater degree of judgment in financial reporting. There are requirements in here for the auditor to include, with respect to those accounting estimates, any indication of management bias at one end of the range or the other. The requirement in here to communicate to the audit committee any complaints or concerns that the auditor has heard about regarding accounting, and the requirement about documentation of the communication such that an experienced auditor, whether it's written or oral, an experienced auditor and the engagement quality reviewer, therefore, can understand what communications have been made. Those are just a few, but in general, I think this standard will really increase the dialogue between the audit committee and the auditor, which really will help achieve that process for which, as you said, Sarbanes-Oxley had expected the level of communications between the auditor and the audit committee to take place. I think the standard has robust requirements so that that will happen.
Good. Thank you very much.
Okay, let me call the question then. All in favor of the motion, which is to publish this proposal for public comment for 60 days, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? There are none. So the ayes have it. The motion is carried unanimously, and the proposal will be published. There's no further business on the agenda of the open meeting, so we will adjourn this open meeting and reconvene in a closed meeting in 5 minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.